You're listening to the Fantrax Radio Network. Fantasy sports lives here.
Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
It's hard to return a monkey these days.
I'm going to have to do some more research on this to see exactly what these zombie raccoons are doing.
What good was the snow guy?
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Y'all don't understand. I never seen so many Dominican women with cinnamon tans.
You're Macaulay Culkin, and you're just running around your house.
Don't tweet me if you drink the strawby. No strawby.
Zardoz.
Well, speaking of garbage, it's a Nasty Cast. All right, welcome to episode 161 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am Nathan Dokken. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dokken. And I'm joined, as usual, by the very fresh Van Lee.
Yeah, my pants are clean. I showered before we started podcasting because I wanted to smell as
good as
possible. I did, actually, yeah. Not for the reason of podcasting. I just enjoy taking showers, as weird as that comes across as kind of creepy, but I don't really mean it that way. I like being clean, and I like hot water, so I'm going to stop talking.
Was there a comforter in the shower with you?
Not this time. No, fortunately, there was not. Though there was something on my comforter the other day. I'm like, are you kidding me? So I got like a shout, like wipe, and I cleaned it up, and it's okay. So I don't have to clean that quite yet.
You put away the washboard. What's up, Ron Rigney?
So does that mean that creepiness is next to cleanliness?
Just a little bit. It's next door to it anyway. Vanliness is also close to cleanliness.
What did you guys eat for dinner tonight?
What did I eat? I had a Sonic chili cheese coney.
Yeah.
I wish so bad that Bismarck would get a Sonic, because, man, the hot dogs on the pretzel buns, arriba.
Yeah. Sonic's good stuff.
Delicious. I made actually homemade beef and broccoli in black bean sauce.
Ooh, very
dang.
Nice.
Dang.
What about you?
I had some leftover fajitas that I made last night with you, by the way. Yeah, bro. Yeah.
You did mention that yesterday. So
yes, I did.
Get it,
yes,
son.
I'm currently drinking a Twist Up, which I don't generally try to advocate for mega conglomerates such as Walmart, but Twist Up is the Sprite of Walmart. So, and I actually find them better than Sprite or 7-Up, and it's the only soda I drink because I don't drink caffeine. So I enjoy it from time to time.
What about Dr. Thunder?
That's an amazing name, but nope, caffeine can't do it.
Okay, gotcha.
And the Dr. Thunder.
And it's like, about that. And the Mountain Dew version is something like Hill Syrup or something like that. It's not even good.
No. It's what is it? It's
Lightning.
Something Holler, isn't it? In like Mountain Holler. it's something like that.
No. That's what Sasquatch produce.
Oh,
that's what you made the snow cones out of.
Yeah. What's your favorite beverage? Tweet us at NastyCastPod.
Mountain Lightning.
Okay.
Oh, there we go.
There's one out there called Mountain Holler.
Hillbilly Holler apparently shows up. That's the Fastco version. I don't even know what that is. I just looked up Mountain Dew knockoffs, and there's also Stars and Stripes Mountain Edition. Mountain Shoutin. Mountain Rush. Kickaboo. No, that's a different thing. Mountain Holler.
You're just kickaboo. Now you're just making stuff up.
There's all sorts of business. And then it's like Mellow Yellow. Yeah, we know that one. Wow.
Let's see what we got. Okay, so for Dr. Pepper knockoffs, we've got Dr. Skipper. We've got
I don't
Dr.
trust
38.
The doctor.
Piggly Wiggly has the one that's a knockoff of Mr. Pibb that is Mr. Pig. I'm sure.
Wow.
Yeah, that sounds.
I wonder if he's related to Scout Pig.
The sequel. Bulls,
Dr. Bold. Dr. Wright. Interesting.
If you want to talk to Dr. Wright, you can tweet him at the Real Mod A. I don't know what Owen Wilson's handle is, but he's out there somewhere. Van, as I believe I said, is at Manly Van Lee. If you want to get a hold of us and you don't have Twitter, or if you just prefer email, you can get a hold of us at nastytrackspods@gmail.com. And if you like the show, if you want to support us, You can rate and review the show on iTunes. If you want to donate to our Patreon, it is patreon.com/nastypod, and you can help us purchase Mountain Thunder. You can also, if you give us as little as $1 a month, you can even get access to our Slack channel. And you can talk to us at all times.
And maybe also, we'll send you some Dr. A+, which is also another one of them, too.
Yes.
No,
yes.
Really?
Yep. I'm looking at it right here.
Dr. A+, yep.
I like the one where it's the Target, the Market Pantry, the Target one, and it's called Dr. Spice, but then it has to tell you underneath it that it's a spicy cola.
Also, Dr. Spice,
it's a spicy
like,
cola.
It hey. Sounds like something you'd find on like the Playboy channel at like 3 a.m. in a hotel when you're flipping through the channels. It's like, hey, you want to check out some Dr. Spice?
Starring Dr. A+.
You ever buy soda from an extremely Italian man? You're like a soda. Patreon.com/nastypod, everybody. Fantrax Dynasty to Baseball is another podcast that we do. You can listen to that and enjoy it. But on today's show, we've got a lot to get to. We welcome from the Baseball Holics Anonymous podcast, Doug Thorburn. And we're going to discuss some of our favorite and least favorite pitching deliveries, which is a fun conversation. We've also got some underperforming pitchers, some injured hitters, and we're going to replace the suckiness in your life with the waiver wire. So before we take a break to bring on Doug, let's get our plugs out of the way. Van, what do you got coming out this week?
This week on FantraxHQ.com, I released my buy low pitchers. I couldn't think of which one it was. I did hitters last week, pitchers this week. That is out. You can check that out. And I once again could not quit John Gray for whatever reason. Everything tells me that that guy's got to be better. And I'm going to stick to my guns because I just don't understand it. But anyway, you can go read that. You can also check out the Launch Angle podcast, which I also do with Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver. That's here on FantraxHQ.com and our other podcast, as well as my other musings on Twitter or Facebook or whatever hot garbage social media you want to follow me on.
What about MySpace?
Reddit. MySpace. I have a MySpace account. It's out there. I looked at it recently, like within a month ago, and boy, I found some pictures that I forgot existed of me.
Okay. But you've got to hand me that URL, man. I got to check that.
I know what I'm Googling right now.
Okay. No, I will tell this real quick. Actually, there's a photo of me that long, long ago, one of the first baseball sites that I started writing for was a site that we created, my friends and I, Brian Vaughn, which people for the backup catcher fans might know. Fans. But anyway, and the website was called sprayahen.com. I won't go into why it was called that, but we wrote about baseball. We did player profiles where we would write fake accounts from the perspective of the players, all kinds of stuff. But we decided, we got drunk one night. I think we were like 20 or 19. This is what after college, because I was super skinny. So I was a little bit older. Anyway, we got drunk one night. We were going to take, quote, fancy pictures. It was at their house, so I didn't have my clothes there. But my Brian's girlfriend had left a suit there, and it fit me, kind of. Like, this is a woman's suit, and she weighed like 90 pounds. I don't know how this suit actually fit me. And there's this picture of me staring into the camera in this very sincere look, wearing a woman's suit, blazer, and it actually kind of fits, and it's creepy. But I'll try and find that. Maybe I can send that to our Slack channel people, too.
There we go. Now, if that doesn't get people to sign up, I don't know what will.
It's tough to find on Facebook. I'm trying to find it as we speak. Can't find it. Anyway, so Fantastics, I got a couple days off from Fantastics. Won't be doing that for a few days, but I'll be back on that in May when new rotation comes out. And then
in May.
Bob, yeah, or in May? What? I don't know. What month?
That's
July.
A long time.
Yeah, I don't even know. Good Lord, I haven't had enough coffee. Anyway, Bob Long and I talked about running backs last night. We talked about one of the new metrics we use over at Big Guy Fantasy Sports for football, it's consistency. So you can check that out. We've recently added that to iTunes and Google Play, so you can check us out more places. And go get the 2018 Consistency Football Guide for your drafts. We got a couple things coming down the line here that we're going to announce as far as football coming up in the next couple of weeks. And then, of course, we got the Fantrax Dynasty baseball pod that we are going to put together here in a few short minutes.
Do you open the show saying, like, consistency, bitch?
No, but I'm going to from now on.
Okay, good. Yeah, you should. I've got my same normal stuff coming out on, let's see, Fantrax HQ on Friday. I've got my Fire and Ice Then Saturday and Sunday are my two-star pitchers and top 100 starting pitchers over at Razzball. So you can check me there. That's going to do it for the plugs. Let's take a break here. Bring in Dougie Thorburn.
Sweet dreams are made of
nasty.
Who am I to disagree? Travel the world and the seven seas. Everybody's looking for something.
All right, and welcome back to the Nasty Cast. And joining us now, we have a very special guest. You know him from the Baseballholics Anonymous podcast. I'm a baseballholic myself, and so I subscribe. It is Doug Thorburn. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Thanks, guys. Thanks a lot for having me on.
It is very good to have you. We had your co-host Sammy Reed on earlier in the year, so now we've got the better half of the podcast, clearly.
Oh, it's very sweet of you to say. I would say there's no way that I can hang with Sam when it comes to football. Baseball, he is to hitting what I am to pitching, but football, that guy is, I don't know if you've read his football stuff, but it's amazing. So I'll throw a little plug at Sammy because his football stuff's great.
Well, there we go. We might have to have him on just to talk some football. No, people would rebel, I think, if we did that.
For us, we have to show strength the same way because it's a podcast called Baseball Holics. Wouldn't dare talk football, but it's killing him. You know he wants to.
Yeah, it is. The people do tend to start switching gears here, especially in July. You got SiriusXM is cutting off the baseball and switching over to football, which is kind of sickening. But, you know, for fantasy football was my first love, too, and so I still get into it a little bit, although my interest has waned over the years. One of the things that I was excited to talk to you about, Doug, and you mentioned how on your podcast, like you're sort of the pitching guy. A lot of times when you do the extracts, he does the hitting, you do the pitching. And I'm always fascinated to get your thoughts on you're a big mechanics guy. And that's one thing that I definitely do not know a lot about. It's hard for me to differentiate all the subtleties when you talk about, like, there's words like subluxation, I think, and pronation, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? But it's fascinating to hear you talk about that, and so I wanted to get some of your opinions here right off the bat. As far as just pitcher delivery, off the top of your head, which pitcher in baseball has your absolute favorite delivery? It can be, it doesn't have to be the absolute perfect, like, this guy will never get injured type of thing, like his mechanics are super fluid. It could just be like it's something weird that works, whatever your favorite is. But what is your favorite pitcher delivery these days?
For me, hands down, it's Corey Kluber. And I know it sounds almost like an easy answer now because he's so good, but the truth is that it was my favorite delivery the moment I saw it. And I actually approved this. Paul Sporer had his starting pitcher guide that he did for years. And I used to contribute my mechanics report cards in that one. And prior to 2013, and it was all because of Sporer, he pointed me in this direction. He said, hey, you got to check out this guy, Kluber. He looks pretty good. And this was during 2012. So he had started a breakout, but it was before his big breakout. And as soon as I saw him, he just exemplified everything that I look for in a pitcher. And he repeated it ad nauseum, which is the best thing he can have. But he has that power. He gets it going towards the plate early. That means, what I mean by that, he has strong momentum. So if you look at a freeze frame of Kluber from the side, when he's at maximum leg lift, like when his knee's at the tallest point, his hip and his whole body is moving towards the target already. Rather than staying over the rubber or staying over the posting foot. And I love that. I love that he's gotten it going, because to me, that's what a pitcher should do in order to take advantage of what his body does. And so for me, Corey Kluber, hands down, and his stability, that's just the first thing, the power, but and the momentum, but his stability is hands down, just throughout the delivery, he in all three planes. So I look at it side to side. I look at it front to back, and I look at it up and down, and it's just meticulous all the way through. Plus, he has that slider. He has the two-headed monster of a slider that can break two different ways and can be equally devastating either way. I love this guy. He exemplifies everything that I learned that I know about. That was a lot of my tutelage came from the National Pitching Association and Tom House, that's his company, and Kluber, he just popped. He wasn't a guy. I worked at the NPA before I saw Kluber, and when I saw him, it just turned everything around.
Nice. What about you guys? Do you guys have any input here as your favorite delivery?
The only one I want to point out is that, and this changed a couple years ago, Charlie Morton, I think it was when he was with the Phillies, switched his delivery up, and he now looks like Roy Halladay. If you go watch back and forth, look at, you know, compare the two deliveries, it's funny. My friends and I called him Halladay Jr., and then suddenly he's really good now, but it didn't necessarily happen because of the delivery. It happened because he throws a lot harder and some other things. But I like Morton's delivery just because Halladay was one of my favorite pitchers ever. So getting to see that same kind of, like, hunched over lurch that Halladay used to do and Morton now does is kind of cool to see.
I just have to say mine is probably, and I know very little about mechanics and the art of pitching and all that as well, but I'd have to say Justin Verlander probably going with today. But I was looking at a couple old school guys because that's what made me think of this, and I was trying to think of guys that I've seen pitch. And one of the guys that I brought up, I put a couple down here that I just like the delivery because they're funky, they're different. I had Dontrell Willis just with the huge leg kick back in the day. Dan Quisenberry for the Royals. But one of them that I had down that I've always thought was cool was Rick Sutcliffe. And I put down Rick Sutcliffe because the way that he holds the ball and brings it forward reminds me of the pitchers on Bases Loaded on Nintendo.
Rick Sutcliffe, by the way, Rick Sutcliffe won what can be argued one of the two worst Cy Youngs in the history of winning the Cy Young Award. Him and Bartolo Colon, neither one of them should have won the award for the seasons they put together. It was so bad. He was an angel, I can say that. But no, Sutcliffe's year he won the Cy Young was so bad. Just go look at it. It's horrible.
I'm going to disagree because he's Bartolo, so no, you can't say that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know what's great is that Sutcliffe is on my favorite baseball game on the old Nintendo. On the NES was RBI Baseball.
Oh, yeah.
He was on the National League All-Stars because that was the year there was the 86 or the 87. They combined those 2 years. Mm-hmm. And it was coming off his Cy Young year. And it had exactly the delivery you're describing.
Nice.
So maybe they just used him as a template for all their players because he
maybe
was 8-bit.
Hey, why not? The only one that really came to my mind right away is good old Bronson Arroyo. He's not really active anymore, but man, that leg. Whew. But anyway, on the flip side of that, Doug, what's your least favorite? Which pitcher has the worst delivery of baseball, in your opinion?
Well, it used to be Ubaldo Jimenez, easily. And what's great is he knew it. He knows his mechanics suck. But he hasn't pitched anything this year. Having to stick to someone that is actually... I'll have to still go to one of my old favorites or non-favorites, and that's Giovanni Gallardo. And he exemplifies what I don't like, which is the blatant over the top. He has one of the most extreme, what I call a spine tilt that I've ever seen, where his head just bails off to the glove side in order to try to raise his release point. And if he could repeat it, that'd be one thing. But when you look at, like, I love Brooks Baseball, and they have, you look at the game logs, you can see their release point data. And you look at Gallardo's release point data, and it looks like a cloud above his head because he's all over the place up there. And it's all high, but he has no idea where he's releasing it. And that was my problem with Ubaldo, too, is guys who just, they can't for the life of them repeat their deliveries. And they're veterans, for crying out loud. Get it down. Figure it out, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man. So I'm just picturing, every time I watch Gallardo now, I'm just going to imagine a cloud over his head. Poor guy. Just getting rained on all the time. What about you guys? Any other deliveries that bother you that are out there?
The one that bothers me, and it's not necessarily because it's bad, because technically it's not his delivery, it's his pre-delivery, is Craig Kimbrell. And it's partly because he's a Boston Red Sox. I just hate it. I hate that he does he looks like a bird, like trying to frighten away a snake. Yeah, that's what it is. He just poofed up. And there's that video of, like, the Phillies fans doing that in the stands as he's pitching. And it's phenomenal. But that's the only one that came to my mind. I've just, like, immensely hated it was because of just, again, it wasn't even the delivery. It's the pre-delivery, but it's just kind of obnoxious the way he does it.
He's puffing up his plumage there.
That's right.
What he's doing. So for this one, I just had a question for Doug, and I don't know. And I'm sure he can answer this because he's a mechanics guy. Is Johnny Cueto, does he need to do that shimmy stuff, or is he just being an ass before he pitches?
What's beautiful is that Cueto can do it. It's actually become a big thing recently, is messing with batter timing by doing the shimmies and the quick pitches and all these things. It's a surefire way to get a pitching ninja gif up on Twitter is to do something like that. But Cueto is one of the rare cases where I'm cool with it because he's so good at repeating his delivery. He knows his timing. He can throw in a quick step. He can a quick pitch. He can throw in a big shimmy. He can throw in a huge Louis Tion type twist with the upper half. He does so many things. He has head fakes, jukes. I mean, it's crazy. He does everything short of balking, and then he still repeats extremely well. So until he doesn't repeat, I'm cool with it. I'm fine. Well,
and what, it's funny, one of the things you said that he's throwing off timing, because that answered a question I was going to have next, is I watched – one of the videos I watched was him against Ian Desmond, and he was throwing in the long shimmy there, and Ian Desmond was getting ready to get in a stance, and as soon as the pitch got thrown, Ian Desmond just backed off, and you could tell it really screwed with his timing quite a bit. So that answers my question right there. Good stuff.
And I was – actually, I don't know why this came to my mind when we're talking about bad windups and deliveries, because it's actually one of my favorites, but Joey Lucchesi. I remember fighting him when he was a prospect, and now that he came up, we get better eyes on him. It's very exciting because I love his windup and delivery. It's really funky and exciting. So he's my choice for the best, actually. He's not the worst at all. Before we move on to the news real quickly, I saw, Doug, that you were tweeting about some of the pitching prospects in this year's draft and what you thought about their deliveries. Was there anybody that stood out to you as far as having like particularly good or bad mechanics or anything notable along those lines?
There were a couple of guys that definitely stood out. I mean, when it comes to draft prospects, I say they all are kind of extreme because they're early on in their development path. So it's the margins for error are a lot bigger. But starting at the top, even with Casey Mize, I really like his delivery. I think he's got great stability. His balance is awesome. He's got good power. But from the stretch, he uses a slide step, and it just kills everything. He's not as stable. He has a shorter stride, which I don't like to see. He has less power, less momentum. It's really a mess. That said, it's a pretty easy thing to fix. And so we'll see if that's something that he retains along the development path, but hopefully he ditches that slide step. So I think that's huge. But hey, he throws a split. I love the split. So he definitely kind of has my heart. But the number two pitcher off the board, and don't worry, I'm not going to go through all of that. It just so happened the first two struck me. But the number two pitcher off the board, Ryan Weathers, I don't like his delivery at all. His power is really, really low, especially for a pitcher taking that high in the draft. I know he has a bloodline, so he has that going for him. But his torque was all hips. It was not, there was no hip shoulder separation. So his hips and shoulders almost fired together, which is a problem. His momentum was rough. His stride was short. His curveball was humpy, so you could see it out of hand. And that's one of those things that young high school, to high school guy, as young college guys, look, when you throw a breaking ball, there's a couple ways to throw it. But if you throw it the twister method, which is bad for your elbow, but advanced hitters can see it out of hand because it leaves the hand with a hump in it. And it looks cool from the stands, and it looks cool from the center field cameras, and we can see it really easily. But the fact is that tips off the batter. And unless you've got a Barry Zito type, grandfather clock of all 12 to 6 curveballs, unless you have something like that, the leaving the hand with a hump in, it's going to get hammered at the highest levels. So I think he has a lot of work to do, especially for a guy who's been around ballparks since he was a kid. But this is the last guy I'll mention, but I really, really liked Clinch Texas, number 15 overall. I love his delivery. That was my favorite delivery of the entire draft, especially with the power. his balance was excellent. His posture was excellent, everything. But the power, the momentum, and the torque were just incredible. And he drifts a little bit left side, but that's something else that can be an easy fix for him. So I just really loved his delivery.
Nice. Yeah, with Ryan Weathers, I know that his dad is David Weathers, but I think that he should actually bring on Carl Weathers as his pitching coach. And if nothing else, he can intimidate the competition. That's going to help him out quite a bit. All right. Well, that was a fun little side piece. We don't really do that too often, but let's get back into the news. We've got Roberto Osuna, who's been suspended officially now, finally, after he's, not been playing for quite a long time. 75-game suspension handed down from MLB. For violating the league's joint domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse policy. He is eligible to return on the 4th of August. He's already been sort of the subject of some trade rumors, Doug, but should we even bother rostering him at this point?
I mean, August 4th, can they even make a deal with the guy who is on the restricted list or something like that? I mean, you know, so as it is, it's going to have to be the pre-arbitration trade deadline.
Right, yeah.
And he's obviously not going to be moved before then. He'd have to be a guy who clears waivers. I mean, so he's not going to go anywhere else. I'm curious to see what the team does with him, especially with other guys succeeding in the role. But I think right now there's too many bullpen spots, relievers, closers with saves, turning over right now. Those are the guys that the roster spot needs to be used on, not guys like Osuna.
Very good. Van, we'll go with you next, and I'll round things up.
Yeah, what I'll say is, I mean, good for baseball for finally getting this sorted out. They suspended him August 4th is when he could come back. Here's the thing, though. We already have a long history of baseball and other sports, and you've heard me talk about this on the podcast before, who basically do, well, I won't say the bare minimum, but do what they need to do, and then these players come back, and they're treated like normal people. I mean, Matt Bush nearly killed a man, and then the Rangers said, you know what, here's a bunch of money, come play for us, you're going to be a top 1%er just because you're good at a sport. So I really think that this isn't a talent-level thing with Roberto Osuna. He wasn't hurt. He didn't lose, you know, anything in his performance. So I think because he's still going to be a really good pitcher, somebody's going to give him the job. And if it's not the Blue Jays, it's going to be someone. So I think he comes back this year. Maybe he doesn't close the rest of the season this year. Maybe they let Ryan Tepera do that. But I still could see him doing it this year, and I definitely think next year he's right back to being, you know, one of the top closers, because he's really good. He's just a piece of garbage human being. So ultimately, that's not going to matter in the grand scheme of things, because he's good at a sport, so they're going to let him continue to be good at a sport. So Dynasty League-wise, I'm still buying in just because, hey, he's going to have a job, and I think he's going to be really good still going forward.
Yeah, not too much to add. You know, like Doug said, redraft, it's kind of dicey as far as keeping a roster spot for him. I think there's other options you can go out there with jobs that are changing over. It's funny because there's a couple of, you know, in the Facebook pages that we're members of, and on Twitter, I had some people saying, I saw somebody post, Osuna suspended 75 games, run out and get Ryan Tepera. Well, I hate to say it, but I think Tepera has been gone for a little over a month now. So a little late to the party on that one, people that posted that, especially in save in holds leagues, he was gone probably on draft day, and then deeper leagues where you're speculating for saves, he was probably gone as well, just in case something happened, and something did happen. So I don't think he's going to be available out there. But yeah, there's a lot of options as far as low kind of speculatory guys you can add to take that spot. But I don't think there's a need to keep him on your roster in a redraft.
You know, sometimes showing up late to a party is called fashionable. So stop judging, Mr. Robald. I think it's pretty hard to hold on to him in redraft leagues at this point, especially depending on your format. Like, some leagues will let you place him on the DL, but just being suspended, a lot of leagues won't. And that gets really tough when you have to use an actual bench spot to hold on to a guy. That gets really tough. So I think I'd be looking elsewhere for about final bench spot as well. I'll be churning out doing some streaming, maybe some other handcuffing elsewhere, because that is quite a while away, the date of August 4th when he comes back. And this next bit of news, I pretty much just included this for myself because it makes me sad, and I want to, you guys aren't going to help me at all. You're just going to make me feel worse. You're probably just going to rub it in. I don't know why I brought it up at all, but Caleb Smith, anyway, he's lost for the season with a grade 3 lat strain. And he's currently considering having surgery for it. He looked really good, 10.24 K per nine, 3.84 walks per nine with a 4.19 ERA over 77 and a third innings so far this year. And I just traded for Caleb Smith in both of my dynasty leagues over the last 2 weeks. And so that's why I'm angry about this. But Doug, what are your thoughts on Caleb Smith next year?
Well, he really surprised me this year. I didn't know anything about him coming into the year, and he's pretty solid. I I'm surprised with the K rate, given that his stuff isn't overpowering, and his, you know, the reason I like the mechanic so much is the delivery often tells you so much about the player's stuff. So he's a big stability guy, great balance, you know, but kind of low power, and he doesn't throw super hard, so that's not a surprise. But so that's why the K rate isn't a total match for the stuff that I see. But the lat strains suck, especially when you consider how early that is in the kinetic chain mechanically. That's you think of how bad elbow injuries are or shoulder injuries are, but it's scary that those lat issues are becoming more and more of a problem. They used to be, I remember when Jake Peavy went down with a lat issue, that was such a weird injury that no one had really seen from a baseball pitcher before. Now we're seeing a decent amount of it.
I bet Jake Peavy didn't swear when that happened.
Oh, no, not at all. He's a very clean mouth person.
Or spit tobacco.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, Van, where would you rank him heading into next year?
Probably nowhere near where he's going to go would be the short answer. I'm kind of with Doug here in that these lat injuries are starting to scare me a lot more. We saw it with Syndergaard. We've seen it with Alex Reyes. We're seeing it with Caleb Smith. And a lot of it partly is because of, you know, the increased velocity over the as the years have gone on. Now, if you don't throw 100, you really don't throw hard at all anymore. So as we're seeing the human body start to do that, we're going to see different injuries and more injuries. And I think the jury's still out on lat injuries and whether or not it's easier to come back from them than, say, a shoulder injury or vice versa or what have it. So I wasn't that super impressed with what Caleb Smith was doing. Sure, the strikeouts were nice, but he was still walking a lot of guys. He was giving up some home runs. The ERA was still at 4.19. He was fine, but he wasn't really, you know, a super target. So he, to me, is going to be a guy that I'll take as my third or fourth pitcher maybe next year just to fill in a rotation and get some innings. But if I'm considering that, I also have to consider the lat injury. So is he going to get those innings? I don't know. So the state of pitching being what it is this day and age, I don't know. It's kind of tough. I think I'd rather try and go after someone who, you know, might be quote unquote a worse pitcher, but I know is going to get my innings just because I'm going to need that at some point. So I don't really know where I'm going to put him in the top, you know, 100 pitchers or whatever, or where he'll be at. Excuse me. Sorry. Only time will tell to show that. But to be honest, I just wasn't that excited seeing him this year anyway.
I think, Nate, where you got him in the dynasties, the deeper dynasty formats, is a perfect place to target him. You know, like you said, the K per nine is over 10, which you got to like that. But he's one of the few Marlins that was actually worth anything to have on your team. There's really the only other pitcher that is really worth anything was maybe Kyle Barraclough, and maybe that's about it. Other than that, not a whole lot in the rotation to like. There's maybe a couple guys in offense in deeper leagues you might like, but he's one of the few fantasy-relevant Marlins. And so it'll be interesting to see how he rehabs from this. Definitely a guy that, you know, like Van said, I'd like to see a little bit more of as well, especially coming into spring training next year, just to kind of see where he's at with this and see if he is ready to go full out in spring training and be there opening day, or if this ends up going into a little bit of next season. So anytime you have an injury like this, that's going to end your season. That throws up some red flags right there, especially if it's one of the, you know, like you guys said, it's one of these newer injuries that's kind of taking over, as far as, you know, it seems like every couple of years in whatever sport it is, there's always that injury that kind of takes over as far as the thing that everybody gets all at once. And I don't know if it's just a new diagnosis or what it is, but the, you know, when you think about throwing a baseball and you think about what your lat muscle is, that's something that you got to have right, or you're not going to be able to perform well.
Ben, we got to work on that soundboard, man, because every time the Kyle Barraclough gets a mention on the show, we need like a bear sound effect.
Like a roar.
Yeah. 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 That's got to happen.
and Caleb Smith's lat strain was a grade 3.
That which is bad. Is
really bad.
Yeah.
That's a deep tear. So I think I forget the definition, but I'm pretty sure it's more than 50% of the ligament, so, or the tendon that he's dealing with. So. And actually, no, this is a muscle that he's dealing with. So, tough to say.
Yikes. Grade 3. I freaking nailed that one. Moved right on to fourth.
Wow.
I had no problem with that. I don't know why Caleb Smith is having so much trouble. But no, I think next year, like my top 100 starters on Razzball, before he left, he had just cracked, I think, the top 40. So I think I would probably think of him as maybe a top 60 option next year, given this injury and a potential innings limit. But what you get from him, hopefully will be really good. But we'll move on to another struggling guy here, Carlos Martinez. He has been hot garbage since his return from the disabled list, right up until his last start, actually, which was against the Indians. Actually, he went 6 innings, only allowed 2 runs, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts. So maybe that will give us a little bit of confidence in him moving forward. But, Doug, what is your take on what Carlos Martinez is going through right now?
Well, it's interesting watching what he's doing, because he's doing something that would normally be a good thing for pitchers. And that is, so since he came back from his, the one mechanical thing I noticed anyways, he used to have a very low release point because he has a ton of bend in his knees. It's combined with pretty strong stability overall. So he has good balance, good posture, but his at release point, he has that bend after foot strike. Well, since coming back from the injury, he hasn't had nearly as much bend in his knees. So the result, he hasn't been able to get pitches down. In fact, if you look at his zone profiles on Brooks Baseball, and you look at those specific time periods, you can tell that he's just not getting the ball down the way he normally does. So I haven't seen this latest one, so that'll be interesting. Hopefully he's starting to make the correction necessary, because he's a really talented pitcher. The question when it comes to something in the lower half, is it mechanical in nature, or is it more of a strength conditioning thing? So hopefully it's more mechanical. That makes it an easy fix. If it's strength or conditioning, that might take a little while.
And I'm going to take a little bit of umbrage here with the term hot garbage. He hasn't been that bad. I mean, the ERA is not great at 6.75, but in 5 starts, 3 of the 5, he's given up less than 3 earned runs, and only one of those was 3 earned. The other 2 were 2 earns. He struck out a bunch. He does seem to be working out a few kinks. I'm buying. So if the owner's ready to sell him, I am 100% in. He's really good. The velocity's there. He's only 26. There's not a ton of miles on that arm. I'm buying in 100%.
I think by describing it that way, Nate just told us that he would rather have Caleb Smith than Carlos Martinez.
He did. Yep.
100%. If I'm ever in position to offer him that, I'm going to offer it up, and I know I'll get that all day long.
As in my defense, as a Carlos Martinez owner, that 13 walks in 2 starts didn't make me feel too good.
So you're just salty, is what it is.
I might be a little salty this week. Okay. My pitching is just go on. I can't describe it without being just bleeped out a lot. So just go ahead.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. Van's always on top of that. So yeah, he's definitely a buy low guy for me. I mean, if you're gonna buy low on him, I think now is the time, because he's averaging over 5 walks per 9. The K per 9 is right there. I don't like Doug was saying. I don't know. If the mechanic thing was what made him pitch a little better last night, I wrote about him on Fantistics, and it was good to see the 8Ks. So I think if there's a time to go get him and you have any shot of buying low on him, you got to go do it right now.
I was a lot more worried about him than I was up until about 5 minutes ago when Doug said that it looks like a mechanical thing. That makes me feel a lot better. And that makes sense for when you're out that long to sort of maybe do a couple adjustments and then perhaps struggle with a little bit on the way back. That makes perfect sense and seems like something that he could get ironed out pretty easily. So I'm a full-on buy low after hearing that. So we'll move on to another potential buy low candidate. That's Gary Sanchez, who actually hit the disabled list this past week after really sucking for much of the season. While the power was there, the batting average was not. But Doug, are you buying low on Gary Sanchez, or do you think this is more along the lines of just a sort of a tough season for the catcher?
It's tough to say, because I hate purchasing guys who are injured, because the idea is you're going to get hopefully it'll come back and still be the same. But in his case, I feel really good about him. I think you can get him for 50 cents on the dollar or even less. And I could easily see him being the best or the most powerful catcher of the second half. So, yeah, I'm buying low on him. It's a groin strain. I mean, it's significant enough to keep him out for 3 to 4 weeks, but it's not something that he's not a speed guy. You know what I mean? And it's not the type of lower half injury that would make me worried about it sapping his power. Like the upper half injuries, the wrist injuries, the shoulder injuries, then you worry about power. Then you worry about whether the guy's going to come back the same. Groin injury for a catcher, a power hitting catcher, I'm not that worried. And like you said, the only real problem has been the batting average. His walks are there. His homers are there. So I think he'll be just fine. If you can, hang with having a month of no catcher, then or to make maybe you have a backup. I don't know, but I do think he's worth gambling on right now. Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if you look at his numbers, everything is the exact same thing from last year, with the exception of the batting average. I mean, it's 100 points below what it probably could be. And, I mean, I guess he's walking a little more, but the strikeout rate's the same. The BABIP is 100 points below what it could be. So there's your 100 points in batting average. He's still hitting for power. And I think really the only problem I have with all of this is that a lot of people are like, well, Gary Sanchez is disappointing. Not really. I mean, yes, when you drafted Gary Sanchez, you wanted a 280 hitter, but you can't count on any catcher being a 280 hitter. What they do is completely different from what every other person on the baseball diamond does, and he's still providing the immense power that, you know, was expected of him. So I really think he's doing exactly, maybe not exactly, obviously, but about what he should be doing, with the exception of some bad fortune. So I think when he comes back, and if he continues hitting the ball like he has been, it's only going to get better.
Yeah, I agree. He's doing essentially what you drafted him for. You drafted him for the pop. You didn't draft him because you thought he was going to be a 300 hitter. Let me go through the list of catchers that are hitting 300 real quick consistently. Oh, wait, there's not very many of them. So you're not drafting that to get 300 batting average anyway. We talked about him last week a little bit, and, you know, one of the things that I thought more and more about this week, and in my experience of trying to acquire him, that's one of the roadblocks I've come into, is the fact that, you know, people do spend that premium pick on him to get the top guy at the position. They're having a hard time getting rid of him. And so it is a little more difficult than you think it is to maybe pry him away from somebody. Real quick to it, and we had it listed here, you know, anybody to add. There's actually, and I was surprised at this, there's actually some decent guys to add at catcher if you lost Gary Sanchez. I mean, I'm looking at Fantrax here. You know, a guy we talked about a couple weeks ago, John Hicks, is out there hitting 286. Now, you're not going to find anybody that's got huge average or huge pop, but there's some guys that aren't going to kill you out there. Besides Hicks, Tucker Barnhart's out there with some decent numbers. Tom Murphy's been coming on. He's actually hitting 325 since he's gotten called up. Tyler Flowers is out there with a few bombs. And so there's some guys out there that you can add to make up, maybe salvage a little bit of those numbers until he gets back.
Oh, and real quick, one thing I want to add here. This is a great buy low opportunity if you have interest in buying low on a catcher, which isn't necessarily the wisest of decisions, because as we've seen with Gary Sanchez, I mean, things like this happen. So, and you can't be really that shocked about it because, like I said, it's a whole different position than virtually everything else on the diamond. So if you're interested in buying low on a catcher, yeah, this is definitely a great spot for it.
Yeah, I totally agreed on that point. If you're looking for backups, you might not even have to leave the Bronx, because Austin Romine has been playing really well, you know, behind Gary Sanchez. And now that he'll have the full-time role, he's just got more of an opportunity to give you numbers. Four home runs on the air with it, but a 289 average. It's really good. He's actually damn near 100 points higher than Gary Sanchez was. So maybe not too big of a hit, especially if you're not in a super deep league. But yeah, catcher has been pretty ugly this year. And our last bit of news here, Lorenzo Cain to the disabled list, unfortunately. Keon Broxton is coming back up. Doug, any interest in Keon Broxton?
Very limited interest, just because with the Cain injury, unlike Sanchez, where it's going to be 3 to 4 weeks, they were saying with Cain, they almost didn't put him on the DL. He's going to be out the minimum. So for a week's worth of games. And he hasn't hit exceptionally well, even though he's been playing his AAA games in Colorado Springs, of all places. But he is getting a grip. He's like 24 of 28 on the base pad. So especially if you're looking for a replacement for Lorenzo Cain for a week and a half, Broxton's your guy. But otherwise, unless you're desperate for steals for a week and a half, I mean, the Brewers are stacked. I just don't see a fit for him once King comes back.
I think I'm going to take the opposite route, and I'm going to say he's a definite add. I mean, he has 24 stolen bases and 295 plate appearances right now in the minors, 9 home runs. He's hitting 263. That's probably not going to continue in the majors. But again, we're in a day and age where you've probably been rostering Gary Sanchez all year, batting 190. So the batting average hit isn't that big of a deal for you. And his stolen base potential, where are you going to be able to find that on the wire? Anywhere. I mean, it's insane that could come up. And I think it's really telling that they decided to call up Keon Broxton instead of Domingo Santana. And I think defense plays a huge role in that. So, look, Ryan Braun could get hurt at any moment. Lorenzo Cain could be out a little bit longer. Groin strain's a little more important for a center fielder than some other positions just because of the running involved. So I think if Keon Broxton somehow wanders into 250 plate appearances, you've got another 20 stolen bases, and that's going to be a major game changer for your team. So I'm all aboard Keon Broxton also because I think the cost is going to be next to nothing.
Yeah, you're not going to find steals like that just hanging out on the waiver wire. The only way you're going to get them is through trades, and trades are not always, you know, the most positive place to try to get steals either. But, yeah, he's going to get you some steals, but he's also in AAA striking out 35% of the time, so that's a little bit scary. So he is going to affect your average and your OBP a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be enough at this point to negate those steals that you are going to get. Because, like you said, if he gets 200 plate appearances, you know, he's already got 24 at AAA. He had 21 last year in 143 games. And so, you know, it's something that is hard to come by, especially at this point in the season. So I think he's a definite add for sure.
Well, I was a little bit more on the tepid side of the excitement, but it is a good point about the stolen bases. I do hearken, I think, more along with Doug's point, though, as far as I don't think he's going to get too many opportunities to steal those bases before he's back down in AAA. And yeah, that 36% strikeout rate, that's going to lead to more of a, you know, 220 or Mendoza line-ish type of batting average like he had last year, which is crazy because, you know, as a 2020 guy, it almost negates that value hitting 220 for a full season. So yeah, a little bit more limited excitement on my part for Keon Broxton. That's going to wrap up the first part of this episode, and we are going to take ourselves a nice little break, grab ourselves some refreshments.
Nasty. 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 Nasty.
All right, welcome back to the Nasty Cast. We are on to our final segment, and that is the glorious waiver wire, everybody's favorite. We're gonna look at some potential pickups going on right now, and I didn't get just the first, but Cole Calhoun is the first guy we're gonna talk about. I switched the C and the K in his name completely on accident. I don't know if anybody else caught that.
It's like Mortal Kombat. Oh, yeah. Except that's what you're doing here.
It's like long blind, but yeah.
You know, that actually brings up, you know, we like to do whatever it's called when you switch the first letters, yeah, of the first name and the last name. You know, we've got whole camels. And then on the Fantrax Dynasty podcast, we came up with, instead of Alex Fado, we've got Flex Ado. But Doug, you've got the best one of all of them, man. Thug Dorburn. That's amazing.
Wow. Yeah, that is good.
I thought you were going to say Cole Calhoun, and it's actually the exact same thing if you switch.
Exactly. So what? I don't know what that's called. Like, it's not, you know, it's not a palindrome. I know what the, I don't even know if there's a word for that. There's probably not, because it's such a stupid
exercise.
No,
there is. Hold on. I'll Google it right now.
It's not called dyslexia.
Whatever stupid thing it is that I do in my head every single moment of my life.
Anyway, to Cole Calhoun, we've got in 8 games since he came back from the disabled list. He was just terrible before the DL stint, but since he's been back, he's hit 304, 360, 609 with 2 bombs and a stolen base. So, Doug, is he back? Are you picking up Cole Calhoun anywhere?
Well, he's not. As long as the expectations are what he was prior to this terrible, terrible season. You know, as awful as he was, yeah, he did get hurt. Yeah, he was out for a stretch. No, he's not going to hit this well coming back, but it's a good sign for a guy who was, what, like 2 for his last 34 prior to the time he was hurt. It's only 8 games and everything, but he was definitely a draftable, rosterable player. So I don't think he's going to be that bad going forward. Unfortunately, I don't know hitters the way I know pitchers, so I don't know if he's doing something different or if he's made an adjustment or whatever it was. I don't know if the injury was messing with, but I don't fold people who dropped him before, but I think it makes sense to pick him up now. So I think that he'll be working, or he'll be getting regular at bats, and that he'll be on the upper half of that lineup.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. If you have reasonable expectations, if you look at his last 2 years and kind of extrapolate those numbers out, you know, he could hit 250 to 270 the rest of the way. He walks 10% of the time. He has some pop. He can steal a base every now and then yeah, you're going to get exactly what you're expecting out of it. I think there was something terribly wrong beforehand, and this, everything I've seen, and I've watched all the games since he's come back, it just, he looks like a different hitter. So I don't know if it was health wise. I don't think it was. I think it was all just mental. I think just a little break helped clear his mind, and he's going to be very important for that Angels team, that where every single player is dropping like flies. In case you didn't hear, Zach Cozart's having shoulder surgery, so he's done for the year. So Cole Calhoun's going to be an important player, and I think he'll be fine the rest of the season. And he's probably going to hit, well, he'll hit behind Pujols, but he'll hit in a decent spot in the lineup.
Yeah, deeper league, I think he's definitely somebody you look at, just kind of like Van said, from a volume standpoint, he's going to get at bats. So I'd look at him there, but in anything beyond that, not really so much. And the more important fact that we all are sitting on the edge of our seats wondering, that's called a spoonerism.
Spoonerism?
No.
Yes.
Really?
Yes, yes.
Well, I've always been a spooner, so I guess that makes sense. Ron? You said your piece. I'd say 15 team leagues. Like, if you're looking for a fifth outfielder, then fine. But yeah, I don't expect a whole new level from Cole Calhoun by any means. It's just good to see him not completely useless. So yeah, probably deep mixed leagues and AL only. But maybe a little more interest in this guy, despite a lackluster debut. But it's Shelby Miller. He pretty much had the best matchup that you could ask for his first start off the disabled list. Against the Marlins. Previous guest Nick Pollock of the pitcher list, he would warn us of the dreaded DLH or the disabled list hangover. And that rang true in this one, as he went just 3 2/3 innings, gave up 5 runs, 2 walks and 5 strikeouts. So at least that's not so bad. But Doug, what do you think about Shelby Miller? Are you picking him up in any of your leagues?
I'm going to be avoiding Shelby Miller. He's not as bad as he was before. Last year was a mess. Or at least the last time we saw him on a diamond, he has this extreme flexion with the spine where it's kind of like a headbutting move into release point. And his was so extreme that he basically, his forehead got dirty after every pitch. He almost hit the mound every single time. He almost took a header into the ground every time. And I don't mind flexion. In fact, I like flexion. That's what makes Max Scherzer at least part of what makes him as good as he is. I mean, he has extreme flexion, but what we saw from Miller was so rough that he couldn't repeat. And he couldn't have the same release point. Well, he's tapered it back a little bit, but he still has a ton with it. And he's really, I look a lot at a pitcher's vectors, which sounds kind of funny, but to what extent are they sending all their energy, all their kinetic energy toward the plate? And with Miller right now, at least what we saw in his first start, he would send his delivery towards the right-hander's batter's box, immediately direct everything to the left. Left-hand batter's box. So it was an S pattern. It was never directly towards the plate. So his kinetic energy was fractionally behind everything. And so not only is that tough to repeat, but that is an inefficiency. So I didn't really like to see it. I saw that inconsistency. I know he had great numbers in his rehab in the minors, and I'm glad to see that he's doing a little bit better as far as that crazy flexion that he had. But I could find better uses for my roster spot for now, until he shows something a bit better.
Completely agree. I want nothing to do with him. You know, before the Tommy John surgery, he'd had his 2017 and 2016 seasons were bad. So, I mean, why would we expect him to immediately be good? So I don't have any interest. I mean, maybe because he always had good velocity and had a little bit of potential way back when he was a Cardinal. And that one season with the Braves. So maybe he can get back to being a decent pitcher. I just don't think that's going to be this season. I'll give him this year to get healthy after the Tommy John surgery, come back next year and see if maybe he'll be a late round flyer for me. But this year, I don't really want anything to do with him unless I see something, you know, that just blows my mind.
Yeah, a few things here with this. First of all, every time I see Shelby Miller pitch now, I'm going to picture him headbutting the mound after release, like every time now. So I've got that image in my head. Second of all, and I think this can be said with every guest that we have, but with vectors and flexion and all this stuff, it's safe to say, guys, Doug Thorburn is way smarter than we are.
I'm using different words.
And the other thing, the third thing is too, you know, you mentioned that one season with the Braves, man. Boy, did the Braves pull a fast one on the D-backs in this deal.
That was when the Diamondbacks were trading everything good away for garbage.
Yeah, yeah.
Even at that time, everyone, not just me, I was going to say I was like, but everybody was like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, at that point, they, you know, because that was the Dansby Swanson deal, right? And that was the big piece of that. I mean, that was one of those things that the main thing I said when they made that deal was they don't even know what they have in Dansby Swanson yet. You spend a number one pick on him, and you're already sending him out for a guy that has a 7.5 K per nine. That's not really that great. But as far as performance, just real quick, Shelby Miller hasn't been good since 2015. So, I mean, that's all I need to see right there. Like everybody's alluded to, the last couple times he's been on a mound, he's not been impressive. He walked a decent amount. His K per nine has never been, it's been in double digits in one season in the majors, and that's it. So outside of maybe an NL only league where I maybe need somebody because of injury, I might take a flyer if he looks a little bit better in his next start. But when you can only go 3 2/3 against the Marlins and you're getting drilled, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, I too am going to be taking a wait and see approach with Mr. Miller. Let's move on to our next guy. That is Gerardo Parra. In 189 plate appearances since May 1st, he is hitting a ridiculous 347, 371, 493. He's got four bombs and four steals. Doug, any interest in Gerardo Parra?
I've got a ton of interest in Parra. I love that Parra is out there. In fact, I've got him on a number of. Anytime you have a Colorado hitter, I don't care if he is hitting in the bottom part of the lineup, you've got what's turning into a Colorado regular, and especially in outfield, trying to fill in one of five spots in the outfield. I mean, any type of daily transaction league, someone like that comes in really handy. He's in every single day whenever they're playing a home game, and he contributes a little bit across the board. You know what I mean? He's a small five category guy.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think he's like perpetually underrated. And I mean, we're seeing more and more injuries with the Rockies. We saw David Dahl. He's out for, I can't remember if the whole season or at least 2 months or whatever. So Parra should get some playing time. Desmond will probably play at first base, so he won't eat into the playing time. So I really do think he's going to get plenty, and he's not going to hurt you in any one category. So if you're in need for outfield help, and he's out there, why not take a flyer on him? It seems like he's been on the waivers for every single league I'm in, and I don't know why I haven't just picked him up personally, because I could certainly utilize him everywhere. And I mean, he doesn't walk a whole lot, but the average is high enough to make up for the low walk percentage to still give him a decent OBP. So yeah, I'm all in on Gerardo Parra.
Yeah, same here. You know, you look at the walk percentage is pretty low, but the OBP is still pretty impressive, and he's a BABIP machine. He's got a 351 BABIP this year, 343 last year. He's hitting over 300, and he's only owned, because I just looked it up here in Fantrax, he's only owned in 42% of Fantrax leagues. And I don't know too many times you're going to go out and find a guy on waivers that's hitting over 300, that's got a 340 OBP, that plays at cores, that can steal a handful of bases, that could get you double-digit home runs. So if he's out there, he's definitely worth an ad in most formats, just because of what else is out there on the waiver wire, which is a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah, and it really goes underappreciated just how much, like, especially, like I said, over the last 2 months, so damn near a 350 batting average, like how much that really can help your team. And I've got him in three leagues myself, so I am a fan. So, yeah, there you go. Good, go pick him up wherever you need some outfield help. He's I'll take him over Cole Calhoun, that's for sure. John Gant is our next guy. He's filling in for Michael Wacha in the Cardinals rotation. He just one hit a very tough Indians lineup over seven innings, five walks and four strikeouts. So the, you know, the K walk isn't great, but John Gant, what's your take on him, Doug?
I don't see him as someone who's going to have a big impact. Allowing one hit over seven against the Indians is going to get him so much hype. If you're in a fab league, someone's going to overpay for this guy's services. He's going to be starting for the Cardinals, so that alone has some value. But he doesn't have overwhelming stuff. It seems like he's tough to hit throughout his career, but it's never something you can trust. And so, unless the stuff is overwhelming, and his stuff just isn't. So, because when I see a guy with a low hit rate and he has an abnormally low, or his stuff is just not that impressive, I tend to kind of bypass on him. So if you're desperate for pitching, he may not kill you in the ratios because he has decent stability and I think he can repeat well, but I don't imagine he's going to be helping that much in the strikeout category. We'll see. I mean, the Cards have an offense, so maybe they'll get you a few wins.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those cases where it's ride the wave while it's high. There's probably not a whole lot there, but he does currently have a swinging strike rate well above his career rate of like 9%. He's now at 12%, so therefore the strikeout per nine rate has bumped up a bit. who only time will tell if that's a, you know, a physical change, if he's changed something and now we can count him to strike out 8.5 per nine, or if he's just, you know, like we said, riding a wave and we're currently at the peak. The problem with John Gant I see is every time I see him, all I can think of is Ron Gant, former announcer for the Atlanta Braves and, of course, baseball player. And it's worth pointing out that Ron Gant is currently the co-host on some Atlanta television show program called Good Day Atlanta. So fun fact there, Ron Gant.
Excellent. Hashtag Ron, van fact.
Yeah, that is a definite van fact. I remember Ron Gant had some giant forearms too.
30-30, I think at least once, twice maybe.
Yeah. Pretty solid. I love the Ron Gant reference there. And we talk about the Cardinals at a couple different positions. We talk about their outfielders. We talk about their pitchers. And it just seems like they churn out these guys that aren't spectacular, but they're just kind of solid major leaguers. And I think that's kind of the best you can expect out of Gant. I know he's not a homegrown guy. He's bounced around a little bit. But, you know, when they get these guys and they work with them a little bit in their minors, kind of fine-tune what they do. But, you know, he's not a huge strikeout guy. The 8.5 is nice for a guy that you can get off of waivers. He's only stranded 53% of runners, so I'd like to see that go up a little bit. His FIP is actually 2.92, so he's a little better than what his ERA indicates that he is, but he's kind of a deep league ad. I don't know if he's going to be up long enough that you're going to get a whole lot out of him, but like Doug said, he might be a good guy to maybe get a couple of wins out of before they send him back down.
Yeah, I think he's in streaming territory for me, but I was just looking up his future matchups, and he's got, if I can find him again now, where did I put the hell, John Gant? He's got the Braves, and then he's got the Giants, and neither one of those are particularly enticing. So I think pretty tepid optimism. I'd probably 15-team leagues again here before I have any interest in John Gant. The last guy that we're going to touch on here, he is the opener and the closer. He is the alpha and the omega. He is Sergio Romo. He's got he's started 5 games. He's recorded 6 saves. Very strange what's going on there in Tampa. Ron, we'll get your thoughts in a moment. But, Doug, what is your take on this weird-ass Sergio Romo usage?
Well, there's no telling what they're going to do. But the fact is that Alex Colome is now married. So the closing duties are wide open. He's getting the saves now. He's got 6 of them now. And he's gotten a lot of them very, very recently. So might as well write it. I mean, the whole saves gambit, it's such a crapshoot. And everybody has lost one of their closers at this point in the season, either to ineffectiveness or injury or whatever. And everyone can use saves. So, yeah, I think he's definitely worth an ad. But also knowing that either the team could change the way he's being used, or they might deal Romo at the deadline just because they'll deal anything that's not nailed to the ground.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess if you're okay with your ERA and WHIP, then, and you could utilize some strikeouts, some wins, some saves, sure, definitely grab him, because not only will he get you some saves, they're going to do some weird stuff with him, and he may vulture some wins, he may start some games, and, you know, if he throws 2 innings to begin a game and gets 4 strikeouts or whatever it may be, it's just they do weird stuff with him, and I think you're going to get some peripherals as long as you can handle the ERA hit, which isn't great, 4.68 right now, although FIP and XFIP do like him a little bit better at a little bit under 4, so why not roster him if you're in need? I mean, everyone's in need of pitching, and he's going to provide something, but you're very right, Doug. They may trade him, and Ron may have some inside information on that. I don't know. But if they do trade him, I think that value pretty much goes out the window. But for right now, for the Rays, definitely worth a while.
Well, I don't know why at this point in the season you wouldn't want to add the potential AL MVP to your roster, because you could be able to do that with all the things you do. Now, I mean, and Van, it's interesting. I think you just, for the first time ever, you said concerning fantasy baseball, vulture or win. I don't know if I've ever heard that be used. And this is kind of a wonky situation for that, but that's definitely the case. I mean, yeah, like Doug said, you know, we talked about guys that you might use that Osuna spot on as far as to get saves. This is a guy that you might want to throw in there. I mean, I'll throw my homerisms, you know, out of here. And the fact of the matter is, you can get a few saves here, but he still has a 4.68 ERA. He is striking out some guys, but, you know, he is the guy right now. But, you know, with the weird stuff that they do, I mean, you know, they have the bullpen. They're kind of the ones that have made the bullpen day popular this season, and they're seeing some success with it, having him start games and then he's closing games. And, you know, we saw him kind of jawing a little bit last night, you know, so there's that. And I mean, it's something that you can ride the hot hand while it's there now, but I mean, it's something you're going to invest very little in. So maybe if you can get maybe 8, 10, 12 saves out of it, why not? And maybe a couple wins sprinkled in there. Why not go for it?
Yeah, man. Saves is saves. And at least you're getting strikeouts too. So there's that. So yeah, I'll just about in all formats pick up for me. If you're in 10 teamers, then you probably have better options, even a closer, but I got to get them saves, baby.
Before we move on from him, is he got enough games to be eligible as a starter in most leagues too? Okay. So see that there's that too, right there. So you can have a guy that you could get some saves out of a starting position as well.
Sparp.
And one quick note on Romo is if he is starting games, he won't be getting wins there. My first job in baseball was in a press box slash, and how often the best pitcher of the day was the starter, but he only lasted four. So since he didn't go the requisite five innings, we had to pick some one inning guy to give the double.
Oh no.
So dumb.
So what you would do then is go down on the field before and like ask for donations and hot dogs and stuff. Be like, you could get a win today. I'll give you the win. Win goes to the highest bidder.
It was minor league baseball. It was AAA baseball, so sure, everything was in play.
Yeah, right on. Oh man, I actually kind of think that's one of the things that like endears baseball to me. I just love wonky stuff like that. But that's just me. But that's gonna wrap us up, Doug. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us this week. Go ahead and before we get out of here, plug anything you got coming out and make sure everybody knows where to find you on social media.
Well, thanks again for having me on, guys. Been a blast. They can find me at @Doug_Thorburn on Twitter, and I'm co-host with Sammy Reed of the Baseball Holics Anonymous podcast. They can find that on iTunes or Stitcher. Just look for Baseball Holics. We're the only ones. If you want to hear more of this banter, I think Sammy and I are recording tomorrow, so there'll be another episode coming out soon.
Awesome stuff. Thanks again, man. And a little public service announcement, I guess, for our listeners out there. Next week, there will be no NastyCast. We're taking a week off for the 4th of July holiday. And hey, we've been going since the second week of January. So a little mid-season break here to get reinvigorated, freshen the juices. I don't know, whatever insert metaphor.
Whoa.
I don't know.
I'm offended that you think my juices are not fresh all the time.
Oh man, you gotta replace those juices. They are getting moldy. But if you do want to hear our glorious voices, we will be putting out an episode of Fantrax Dynasty Baseball, which we will still have out the next week. So you can look out for that. So until then, may the fantasy gods ride upon you.